Sì, ma
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the City Council work session for Monday, December 6th. And Vice Mayor Kyle Bishop has agreed to read our vision statement.
Hi. We envision a distinctive community that prospers while and by protecting its natural resources, with a sustainable economy and infrastructure that assures public health and safety while promoting personal development and initiative, and where all members take social responsibility and actively participate in decision-making affecting growth, development, regulation, and enforcement, and in which people retain a closeness with and a caring for each other individually and collectively while working together to accomplish community goals and preserve community traditions.
Thank you very much. We're going to go through the work session agenda first, and then we'll look at the go through the draft general meeting agenda after that. And one item on the work session, the tsunami siren location, we're going to postpone. We all got an email from Matt Davis saying he wasn't going to be available to participate tonight because he had another work commitment. So I sent him an email back thanking him and saying, I'm sorry we couldn't do it tonight, but I would postpone it to next month. And in the meantime, I'm asking the council members to read his email and look at the two attachments he sent, so you have a chance to be aware of what his view is with regard to the tsunami siren location. So then moving into the rest of our agenda, the first item is city council training with the public library. And I see we have our wonderful librarians on line. So if you would like to move forward with your presentation, we're.
Okay, we're ready. We just need to be made co-hosts so we can share.
Clerk's working on that.
All right, thank you.
Do you have the presentation up? Can I go? Hello, this is Leanne Weichel. I'm here with Jesse Soder. We're your two librarians, and we want to thank you so much for this opportunity to tell you about the Gustavus Public Library. It's a place that we dearly love and are excited for you to get to know it a little bit. We felt that it would be important enough to read our mission statement because it's an important enough statement about what we believe in, what we do here at the library. The mission of the Gustavus Public Library is to provide community members and visitors of all ages with a welcoming and supportive environment to freely access information, materials, and programming to support literacy and lifelong learning, facilitate connection to a place and culture, and meet recreational, social, intellectual, and cultural needs of the community. We very much take that statement to heart and believe it with all our heart and soul. The next bullet says that the Gustavus Public Library volunteers are a foundation, and that is absolutely true and has been proven over and over again. Jesse and I are both new. We started this summer, and without the volunteers and their support and help, the library just would not be what it is. So we actually want to call out the current desk sitters and volunteers, because they are here every week. They come, whether it's 2 feet of snow or a hot and sunny day, they are here. And so our current ones are Julie Howell, Shelley Owens, Bonnie Harris, Carolyn Elder, Karen Sargent, Jay Crapella, Kathy Hawker, Bev Sales, and our newest one is Lou Cyrene. In addition to those ladies and gentlemen, we also have many other folks that give us their time and talents, and we're very, very grateful for that. This next slide is Meet the Library Staff. There are four of us. Jesse Soder is the Library Administrative Director. I'm Leanne Weichel, and I'm the Library Services Director. And then a new hire for us is Melissa Gohm. She's in a temporary position and doing the cataloging position. And then not pictured is John Sanchez. He's our most awesome library custodian, and he is really making our place very spick and span. A little bit about what the library service director does. It's a part-time position, 25 hours a week. The big things that this position entails, that the things that take up the most of my time, are programming. And it's intended to be for programming and services for people of all ages. We have outreach to the Gustavus Preschool and the public school and other community organizations like the Community Center. And I'll talk a little bit about some of the outreach and collaboration we've done with the school and the Community Center. The rest of that takes up my job and my time, but it's not everything. It doesn't take as much as the programming and the services does. We wanted to share some of the highlights and accomplishments that Jesse and I have achieved since we started in June. And at this time, we also need to thank Bree Olson, because we were both new. And it's worth noting that she really stepped up and helped out. She came in and helped us learn our jobs and understand the library and know how things work and find where things are. And so Bree, I know you're out there. Thank you very much. We wanted to make sure you heard that from Jesse and I. Some of our other highlights and accomplishment, just if you just follow the pictures around the board or the screen as you're looking at it, we've managed to reopen the library into a 5-day schedule. We are also continuing our curbside services and customizing book boxes for patrons as they want. The library building is clean, organized, and mostly clutter-free. We've actually received a lot of compliments about that and are taking a lot of pride in that. On new signage for the library that actually match the labels on the books. And I would like to thank Kathy Hawker, our volunteer who's been doing that. It's time-consuming and she's been doing a great job with that. The new roof was completed in September by Gustavus Construction. It's awesome. We've removed all the library belongings from the old preschool and are utilizing our new shed, which is really nice. It has also helped us clean out the sunroom, because there was so much there that was just stored, which makes the sunroom actually a place where you can read. And you're going to learn more about an opportunity to do that in a little bit. We've updated and maintained a fluid COVID-19 mitigation plan and policy. And in most exciting news, since June, we've added 385 new books and 15 new DVDs to the collection. And since June, we've also restarted in-person programming while also maintaining our curbside and individual appointments as requested and needed. It's important to make note that we're doing both. If you're someone who is able and comfortable coming in the library is open to you. If you're someone who, for whatever reason, are not able to come into the library or don't wish to, we have worked really, really hard to reach out and make things available. And the curbside and individual appointments are absolutely still available to anybody who needs or wants them. Programming. This is my part of my job. That's the biggest part of my job that I absolutely love. And some of our highlights, successes, and things that are upcoming and challenges are school groups. We are supporting the Gustavus Public School Battle of the Books. We're also supporting that for a large homeschool contingency too this year, which is new. We have a kindergarten, first and second grade class that visits the library weekly and comes over and has a little mini lesson, and then they check out two books. There is a pleasure reading class that comes weekly. They're a middle school age group. We're working to connect with the preschool with their programming, and that should be starting fairly soon. And then weekly, there is a story time that's geared for ages pre-K through second grade. That happens Thursdays at 10 a.m. and it's posted on Facebook, and an email is sent out on the days that it's happening. Other programming that's happening is that the Gustavus Book Club is for adults, and that is currently happening. They just completed reading The Splendid and the Vile by Eric Larson. Their Zoom meeting was on November 30th, and that sounded like a pretty great read. We participated in the Harvest Fest in collaboration with the Gustavus Community Center, and that was actually lots and lots of fun. We were able to bring a lot of books that were themed with that, with baking or canning. And what I really appreciated is all the people who checked out a book, because it was a lot less books for me to bring back to the library. We sponsored the Halloween event, and the pictures on here kind of tell the story of that success. What was awesome about it is we planned for up to 100 kids and adults, and we gave away 85 bags. And we did that through a lot of community support. It was actually what I call a cost neutral program, because we didn't spend any dollars on it. Well, wait, I take it back. If you see the pumpkin there, we did the pumpkin with story time. We had to spend money on that pumpkin. But other than that, everything was donated. And it was just really, really awesome to see the community turn out to support all the trick-or-treaters and the library. Some upcoming things that are going to be new here at the library is something called the Silent Book Club. And the first one is this Wednesday from 4 to 7. If you're someone, or you know someone, who just wants more time to read, but you never seem to manage to fit it into your schedule, Silent Book Club is an opportunity to come to the library and read with your friends. You read whatever you want, though. It's not like a book club where we're all reading the same book. If you have a magazine you want to read, or that fiction story you've been dying to get to, or you just have a million emails that you want to read, although I encourage you to do something more for your enjoyment than work. The Silent Book Club time will be time to be here at the library with other people like you who love to read, want to read, and would like a really welcoming and warm place. So plan on coming to the library on Wednesdays between 4 and 7 for Silent Book Club. And more information is coming out about that. There is also a puzzle club starting every Thursday from 4 to 7 p.m. It's for all ages, just children younger than 8 need to have adult supervision. But we are going to start with jigsaw puzzles, and we'll move into things like maybe some teams doing the New York Times, different fun things like that. But that is starting on Thursday of this week. So we hope to see you here for that. And yes, we do need puzzle donations. If you have a puzzle that is complete, no missing pieces, please, because those are frustrating. If you have a puzzle that you would be willing to either donate to the library or lend to the library, we would love to have those to use, and we'll promise to be very careful with them. Upcoming, we are starting a new program called Books for Babes. It's going to be celebrating all the babies born in Gustavus within a year, and then hoping to get them on the road to reading. That will also tie in with the program that already exists, 1,000 Books Before K, because the single most important thing for a person to become literate is to be read to and read with between birth and starting kindergarten. And we hope to help inform on that and celebrate it and just play and make it lots and lots of fun. And then currently we have a reading challenge going on. It's called Fall in Love with Alaska. It's sponsored by the Alaska State Library, the Alaska State Libraries. And what the idea is that if you read a book about Alaska, or written by an Alaskan author, or illustrated by an Alaskan illustrator, the book counts for the reading challenge. This reading challenge goes all the way from today through April 30th, and you just need to stop by the desk to sign up. There's a little list, a little sign-up sheet, and of course your name goes in a drawing. And then as you meet reading challenges, if you're a teen or an adult, if you read for 15 hours, you get to put your name in the drawing again. Or if you're a child, if you read 15 books, then you get to put your name in the drawing again. We have an extensive extensive, awesome Alaska collection. And there's just so many books here. It's something that is a real credit to the librarians that have come before us, because they've really worked hard to develop this collection. And I'm actually really, really proud of it. We've revamped the areas a little bit and relabeled them, but stop by the library and you'll see. All right, I'm going to turn this over to Jessie. She is the library administrative director.
All right, hello everyone. In that picture, I am not the M&M, I am the X-ray, in case you couldn't figure that out. My job entails lots of different things. There are certain things though that I spend more time on than others. I listed the things I spend more time up near the top. One thing I spend a lot of time doing, which I love doing, is selecting and ordering materials. I take requests from patrons. Leanne collects requests and passes them on to me. Volunteers collect requests and pass them on to me. I love requests. I love trying to find the things that people want to read. And so I use that. I research, I read reviews. I'm always looking for books and DVDs to order. And so when all those things arrive, then I get to catalog them. I enjoy that as well. It's pretty time consuming, but I get to know all of the books that we're putting out on the shelves. Do some weeding of the books, trying to make sure that our shelves don't become overcrowded. Interestingly, there are many studies that show that shelves that are overcrowded are browsed less than shelves that are less crowded. And so we try to make space for all of our new materials. I do a lot of work coordinating interlibrary loan services. So we collect requests again from patrons looking for things that we don't have on our shelves, but that we can borrow from libraries around the state and across the country. And so we place those orders and those books come into us and then we get them out to patrons. And then when they're done reading them, ship them back to their home libraries. I do a lot of work keeping track of our budget, making sure that we're on track with spending, asking lots of questions about the budget, and preparing, submitting reports, quarterly report, which we will be presenting to you next week at the meeting. I also will take this opportunity to tell you a little bit about Melissa Gome as well. She is our library assistant. She's been working with us for maybe 3 or 4 weeks. And so her position was created in order to fix inconsistencies with our online catalog. And so I have a picture up here on the screen that shows you an example of an inconsistency with books. These are all juvenile chapter books. And you can see that one of them is labeled J/F, one of them is labeled JUV, and one of them is labeled J. And so they're not consistent. They should be one way or the other, not three different ways. And just over time with different people working in the library and different volunteers, cataloging books, things have been done many different ways, not necessarily wrong, but many different ways. And so Melissa's here to clean up the catalog, make things consistent, and most importantly, make things easier for patrons, volunteers, and librarians to find. On the screen, you'll see some goals that Leanne and I developed with Melissa for her time here. Her position will last about 6 months. She'll be working about 20 hours a week. A big part of my position is keeping track of the budget and applying for grants. One big grant that our library applies for every year is the PLA, or Public Library Assistant Grant. And that can be for up to $7,000, which we received $7,000 for this fiscal year. And half of that needs to be spent on library materials. And you know, we intend to spend all $7,000 on library materials, being books and DVDs and other things that patrons may want. There are certain requirements that our library has to meet in order to qualify for that grant. We have to be open at least 10 hours a week, provide children's programming, offer interlibrary loan services, have some evening hours and weekend hours, and submit a report in the fall, and a few other things like that. Another grant that we applied for and received was the ARPA, or Alaska Rescue Plans Act grant. And we received about $6,000 for that grant. $3,500 of it was for ideas that we proposed, and we received an additional $2,500 for more materials, being books, DVDs, and things like that. The funding for the $3,500 needed to respond to COVID problems or issues in some way. And so Leanne and I decided that we wanted to make available materials to patrons outside of the library. And so we came up with a few ideas for that, one of which is a story walk or trail and STEM kits to check out. A story walk or story trail is basically a picture book that is displayed on different, or displayed on boards throughout an area. It could be a forest, a trail, outdoors somewhere. And that picture book can be changed periodically so that there's a new book displayed, and you walk from board to board reading the story. And so we thought that it would be great to have a story walk that used the area behind the library and the school. And so part of the grant, the ARPA grant, is for materials to build those boards. And the boards that we were looking at building would look something like this. So they're hand-built, mostly made of wood with a plexiglass cover. And we've been in contact with the school and have a meeting this week with Principal King to talk about partnering with the school and with students to help to create the boards and to find locations throughout the forest behind the school and library to place them. The other part of that grant is going to pay for STEM kits that can be checked out, and a lot of libraries do this. We were inspired by the Anchorage Public Library. They have a great selection of STEM kits. And so these kits have some sort of hands-on activity and then books that support the theme of that STEM kit. You can see a list of kits that we plan to create up on the screen here. They're mostly for children, although there are a couple in escape room and pasta making kits that could be for all ages. One of the STEM kits would be a robot mazes and brain games kit, and it would have materials to make brush bots out of toothbrush heads and little motors and batteries, and then a Kiva plank set that you would build a maze with to run your little brush bot through, and then a couple of books that have different brain games and logic puzzles. So all of those materials would be stored in a tote, and the patron could check that out and take that whole thing home. And when they're finished, they would bring the whole thing back. Another kit that we plan to put together is a human anatomy kit. And so it'd have the a model of the human body that you could take apart, and a model of the human brain you could take apart, some books to support that theme, and a human body puzzle. So I have spent a lot of time becoming familiar with our library budget and asking lots of questions about how it works, which line items certain things come from and go to. And I have learned a lot. And one thing I've learned just recently is that heating fuel is expensive. I was questioning how much heating fuel the library was using, just keeping track of it. I'd heard stories about library running out of fuel, and I did not want that to happen. So I've been keeping a close eye and have learned that we fill the tank every couple of months. And it looks like over the course of the last 2 or 3 years, that's about what to expect. But those questions I keep asking, I keep learning more. A couple of other things to point out about the budget is that we have spent about half of our PLA grant funding up to this point. And so we get $7,000 for the fiscal year. The fiscal year is about half over. And so we have spent about half, about $3,500. So we've got about $3,500 more to go to spend on books. We are seeking funding to support some ideas we have to promote literacy in ages birth through five. So we will be looking for grants and other sources of funding for that. We're hoping to add a hammock reading forest. You can see a picture there down in the corner of some hammocks strung between 4x4s. So we have hammocks on a wish list we are going to put out to patrons very soon. And then we will be looking for ways to fund 4x4s to hold them up. And then we are also taking steps in a bike shed project. It's a project that we've inherited. And so we are trying to wrap our brains around that and how to move forward with that. And Bree has graciously offered to help us with that. And so the council will be hearing more from us about that project very soon. The next thing that I would like to talk about is our COVID mitigation plan. Leanne and I started working at the library in June and July. And so when we stepped into the position, there was a COVID-19 plan and policies in place. And it was very comprehensive and very detailed. And clearly a lot of thought had went into it. And we appreciated that a lot. It was many pages long. And we wanted to simplify it a little bit and also edit it according to new information and what we've learned about the virus. And so we went from, I think, 6 different phases to 3 phases. Phase 3 being open to the public, phase 2 open with limitation, and phase 1 closed. And the plan that we ended up finishing has been changed since we finished it. We edited it in August and then again in October. And one of the problems we ran up against with our plan that we had finished in August is that if there was a COVID positive test announced in Gustavus, our plan required us to close for 72 hours. And which we did when there were cases announced, with the idea that if there was one case, there would be more through community spread, and we didn't want, we didn't want to take the risk of increasing spread by having the library open. But our community proved that wrong, and it seemed as though there were one case and then none after that. And so that happened a number of times where there was one case, we closed for 72 hours and reopen. And then there was one case, we closed for 72 hours and reopen. And so it was a lot of opening and closing, and it just was not working the way we envisioned it. So we edited our plan so that if a COVID positive test was announced in town, the library could move to phase 1 or phase 2, depending upon the situation, meaning the number of positive cases, possible contacts, or connection to the library, so that we had some more flexibility and didn't have to close immediately. We are open 5 days a week. We have evening hours, Wednesdays and Thursdays. And we're open on Saturdays, and on Sundays and Mondays, we are closed. And there's lots of ways to connect with us. You can email either of us. You can call us. You can go to our Facebook page. Very soon, we'll have an Instagram page. Please visit our Facebook page and like it. We'd appreciate that. And then we also have a website you can visit. And of course, the best way would be to stop by the library. And if anyone has questions, any council members, we would be happy to answer them.
Council members, any questions for our librarians?
This is Jim Muskowiak. I don't have a question, but I have a comment and actually an appreciation. I've been in the library in the past month quite a bit. I have a project going on, a history project involving fisheries. And the basic resource for that is Pacific Fishermen. And the Egan Library has that in their collection, but it's it doesn't leave the library. But they've made an exception. And they send out a year or two's worth to the Gustavus Library. I can use them in the Gustavus Library, and then we send them back, and then they send more. And it's been working very well. And it's a coordination between the Egan Library and the library here. I feel very comfortable working in the library. The heat recovery ventilator system is on. There are the air filters going, and the library staff has been really helpful. I'd just like to thank them for that.
Thanks, Jim.
Yeah, thank you.
Louis Sharman.
Yeah, Jesse, thank both of you guys for a great presentation. I did have one question about the current COVID phase that the library is being operated under, and tell us a little bit more about that.
Currently, we're in phase three, so we are open with no limitations and capacity. We are masking. We're following CDC guidelines with masking and asking patrons to wear masks.
Very good, thanks.
Do any other council members have any questions before I have a comment or two here? I'm not seeing anything else, but Leanne and Jesse, thank you so much for this very nice run through on the library programs. And our library is a real source of pride to the community. I would guess it's our most popular city operation. And I'd note it's also the school library. Most schools would have their own library, but ours doesn't. And the city doesn't operate the school, but we make a major contribution to the school operations by providing the library, buying the books, staffing the library, and having all the programs that our librarians do. So that's something that maybe we don't always think about, the importance of this library to our school students. I know that many visitors who come to Gustavus visit the library and express their amazement at the nice facilities, its programs. Many are amazed that it's open 5 days a week. That's unusual for a library in a small Alaskan town. We have so many innovative ideas and programs going on, and our librarians make it all happen. And so thanks to you for that. And thanks also to Melissa Gome for her cataloging work. It'll be, it's just a nice detail to get things like that straightened out and consistent. And I have to say, I love the ideas of the story walk idea and the hammock reading forest. So I hope that you can get grant requests to cover costs on things like that. Those are innovative ideas and kind of things that just make our library all the more special. So thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Any other comments, questions, anybody? Okay, well, thank you again. And we'll move on to hearing from our fire chief as he gives us a run through on this all important operation that makes it possible for a lot of us to live here in Gustavus, knowing that if we have an emergency, the house is on fire, or we have a medical or emergency or an injury or something, we dial 911 And there's a whole group of great volunteers that are going to show up, and they know what to do. And that's because we have a really fine fire department. And so, Sol, we'd love to hear from you next. And I guess maybe we need to give him a screen sharing. I'm not sure. Thank you, Karen, setting that up.
All right, sounds good. All right. Well, like Mike said, I'm the fire chief of the Gustavus Volunteer Fire Department, and I'm here to help know a little bit more about our department. This building alone has quite a bit of history to it. Unfortunately, I only had a little bit of time to get some information. However, this building alone was built in 1982. There was an addition to 1987, roughly. Larry Tong being the first volunteer fire chief, and moving on to a bunch of other fire chiefs, to our first paid fire chief and so on. We do provide three paid COVID testers that provide testing at the fire hall for anybody who wants to get a COVID test. This year alone, we did have 39 calls, 37 of which are EMS calls and two fire calls. And like the library, we are very thankful for our volunteers. We have a total of 24 volunteers, 8 dispatchers, and 17 responders for either and or fire or EMS calls. We have several EMT1s and one EMT2 that are able to respond for EMS and at least rural firefighting training for our firefighters as well. As far as our vehicles go, we have 4 total vehicles that we respond with, 2 of which are water tankers, one's the ambulance, and one's a fire engine. One water tanker is down during the winter time just because we have to keep it outside, so we have to empty the water. And then we do provide COVID testing. We have currently 3 testers on site. We test both vaccinated and non-vaccinated passengers traveling into Gustavus. The 2 types of testing we do are rapid and PCR. Rapids are a lot of people know, is within 12 to 15 minutes, and the PCR results can be emailed to you within 4 days upon testing. And that's just because we do have to send those tests out and they end up going to Sitka. What we provide, like I keep mentioning, is the COVID testing, but we also provide the medical and fire emergency services to anyone who needs it. If you dial 911 on your cell phone, to let you know that that actually goes to the troopers, and the troopers then relay that information to us, and then we respond. If we do dial 911 on your landline, it actually does dial our 911 system and you'll get us as well. But either way, you will get help. We can provide a Heart Saver CPR training from the American Heart Association. There are me and 5 other volunteers are able to instruct the community and how to do CPR. There is some questions about the search. Even though the search clinic is not part of a department, the clinic staff does help with our EMS calls when they are needed and available. Unfortunately, Lisa is leaving here soon, but we'll be able to take Zoom call checkups on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays starting December 20th and tentatively through the end of January. That is subject to change, however. What I would hope to achieve in the future is obtaining a wildland water tender. I actually am working on a grant right now that hopefully we'll be able to receive. And also installing an exhaust system for the safety of the volunteers here when they start the vehicles up. They're not breathing in the CO2 fumes, and also when backing in the vehicles as well. Also, I would hope at least get another next few years to get more EMT1s and EMT2 classes, and possibly an EMT3 later down the road for our volunteers and for myself as well. And as far as the rest of it, I'll leave up to you. If I have any questions, feel free. And if you would like to volunteer for the fire department, go ahead and contact me at the fire hall. We can see what we can do to volunteer.
Louis Sherman, your question.
Sol, thanks for a great presentation. It's a really great reminder of all the stuff that our fire department does for us. It's great to be reminded of that. I did have one question for you. In the next couple of months, our clinic provider will be gone, and I believe our EMT2 may be away from the community as well. What are your thoughts about filling that gap for services that would normally be provided by an EMT2 or the clinic provider?
Well, there is a lot that EMT1s can do. The nice thing about the EMT2 that they can provide an IV help addition, but there's a lot of basic life support that EMT1s and ETTs can provide if the need arises. And as far as Lisa gone as well, which is a unfortunate blow, we can, if necessary, also provide call additional help, whether that's the medevacs or the clinic actually will have a staff at there that we can also, if the patient is not as critical to leave Gustavus, we can transfer to the clinic as well. And I'm also hoping to get more EMT2 classes to hopefully provide more people help. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, thanks, Sol. I'm just, having that gap of, for example, not being able to administer IV fluids is of some concern. And typically we have some sort of backup to fall back on, but it sounds like for a couple of months anyhow, we may not. Thanks.
Yeah, no problem. And like I said, the medevac crew will be able to give IVs if necessary as well when we call them.
And I guess I can say that our medical director, Dr. Vaught, is available to at least provide advice over the phone in the case of an emergency. Sometimes I know they give him a call. But it demonstrates the fact that we need to keep encouraging more training and fun, and the council needs to enable that to happen. So it's important for us to keep building those skills to where we have more EMT2s, maybe an EMT3 again at some point. We've qualified for an advanced life support ambulance service, but we need to have those those higher skilled EMTs available to really be able to make the most of our capabilities and provide the best service. Any other questions for Chief Martinez? Okay, one thing I'd suggest too, both for the library and the fire department here is if we could put your presentations on your web pages, I think it'd be nice that they give a nice summary of what the department does, and it might be very nice to have that available all the time on the web page. So maybe that's something we could do. Oh, I've got one other question now, come to think of it, for the chief. A number of us on the council need to, or some of the council members haven't ever done the ICS training. And I know we had an email come out, I think, from our clerk reminding people that that training is available. What direction do we have for other council members? I actually have done mine, so, and it was a couple of years ago. So what's the latest method of doing that? Either if I need an answer either from the chief or from...
So as far as FEMA ICS training, it's actually called IS 100, 200. There's actually quite a few personal studies that you can do on the FEMA website. The website, I can actually email to you, but it is, unfortunately, I can't have it at the top of my head at the moment. But if you go search FEMA training, IS 100, you'll definitely get to the website on Google.
Okay, thanks. And I guess if they're having any trouble, they could check with you and you could help them find the site. And it doesn't take too long to go through those courses. They're, as I recall, maybe 2 or 3 hours online, but they're not bad. And when we have an emergency, having that basic understanding is really important. You won't be a skilled ICS practitioner by going through them, but at least you'll have an understanding of how the system works. Looks like Tanya Lewis has a question.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you, Sol, for that presentation. I just learned recently that if we dial 911 from our cell phones, it won't go directly to the fire department. Is there a number that we can call from our cell phones to go straight to dispatch?
There is. It is 697-1000. It's still 911, so it'll still go through our radio system.
Great, thanks. Is that on our city website? Or it'd be great to get the word out on that, just because so many of us have cell phones now, and it seems like a much faster way to get to basically 911.
At the moment, I don't think it is on our website, but I can work on that.
Great, thank you.
Any other questions for Chief Martinez? Okay, thank you very much, Sol. Appreciate that run through on our department. So we'll go on to our next item. Can we bring up the agenda again on our screen here? Yeah, I can see it now. Just thinking which item I want to actually go to next year. Okay. Okay. Clerk suggests we go to the packet for the general meeting next, and we'll go through that. So the first couple of things, of course, are the minutes. And so if you review those that have been emailed out and see if you've got any additions or corrections to the minutes and be ready to offer them, or let the clerk know in advance would be even better. And then we'll have public reports, staff reports from the library, the Marine Facilities Coordinator, the city treasurer, monthly financials, and the city administrator. I guess we do our financial folks in the treasurer's office through the glass here. Do you have anything you want to say right now about for us during the work session, or do you want to save it for the next month?
Well, the financial reports are not done yet. We are still looking, doing it. So nothing to say at this point.
Okay, that's fine. We'll look forward to getting updated on how we're doing financially next Monday night. City Administrator Tom Williams, I think you had a work session report you'd like to present.
Yes, thank you, Mayor, and good evening. Well, we started our council member information presentations. We started off with parliamentary procedures and description of the clerk's duties. We followed that with the mayor and myself doing an overview of local government, as well as powers and duties of a second class city. The next presentation night, we had our treasurers provide the council information on budgeting, our operating budget, our capital improvement budget, and also a review of our monthly financial reports. In addition, we had our Marine Facilities Coordinator provide an overview of the many duties that he performs, all the activities and responsibilities beyond just the Marine Facilities Coordinator. As you heard, he's kind of a jack of all trades for us. Tonight we heard from the library and the fire department. They provided excellent overviews of their departments. And then in the coming months, you can see below our draft schedule. In January, we're going to have our treasurers back to discuss our budget and capital improvement budget development. And this is in preparation for our upcoming fiscal year budgets and our capital calendar year 22 budget. February, we'll have our BRC manager provide an overview of the operations, maintenance, and needed improvements over there at the landfill. And then we'll close out with a presentation by the mayor and myself on a variety of community-centric issues, things like PFAS and COVID and different projects that are going forward. Just a general update of the status of where we are right now. If you have any suggestions or comments, please send them to me. If you have an item you'd like to see a discussion on or more detail with, let me know and I'll run it by the mayor. A roads update, a big thanks to Glacier Bay Construction for all the snow plowing. It seems to be a crazy winter season this time around. We had intended to do contracts with a couple other snow plowing providers to hit some of the side roads, but it turns out that the municipal snow plowing insurance was just crazy expensive, and it just didn't make it profitable for those folks to have to invest in that insurance with no guarantees for what the winter will bring. So our regular snow plowing provider, Glacier Bay Construction, was able to amend their contract. And as you are well aware, they've been able to go out and get the snow off of our roads. I want to shout out to Justin for doing an excellent job on very short notice at times, getting out there and moving that snow away and that slush away so people can move around. Obviously, we don't know what's going on in all parts of the city. So if you believe your road needs some service, needs to be plowed, contact City Hall, and we'll try to get some service out to you as quick as possible. Our FEMA reimbursement has been received for our COVID-19 disaster. We received approximately $9,300 in reimbursement for costs under the COVID-19 disaster declaration that fell within the areas that FEMA could provide funds for. These are funds that had to be used in alignment with the CARES Act and spent for things like filters or improvements that made it safer for people to be in close quarters. With that $9,300, we're looking at following that approach to provide some additional services and equipment for departments, one of which is providing some funding to the community center to help get a fisher out and catch some halibut so that we would be able to provide some protein for the community this winter. We normally would be able to utilize sublegal moose, but one wasn't taken this year. So we're looking at trying to get some funding for one of the qualified fishers to go out and get some halibut, and then the community center would do all the work in the distribution, similar to what we did last year. If there's not any objections from the council, then we're going to go ahead and utilize that $9,300, similar to what we had done during our CARES Act. And as I describe here, we'll get some funding over to the community center so that they can get a fisher out and get some halibut for those who need the extra protein this winter. Of course, all of these purchases and projects will go through the mayor and will be sent out to the council. I also want to do a big shout out to our treasurer, Phoebe. She did just an insane amount of work documenting and attending meetings with FEMA. I can tell you, and the mayor can tell you the same, working with FEMA is a challenge. It takes a lot of time. Sometimes it's redundant. So Phoebe just hung in there and fought for every dollar, and wanted to express my personal appreciation and recognize her for all that hard work. So rapid testing, as you know, the city received some funds for rapid PCR testing. We are going to be left with about $2,000 identified for the rapid testing that has to be used by the end of March 2022. There's a lot of restrictions with that grant, so we haven't been able to identify any substitute expenses right now, but we're working on that. And then my last item here is on our ARPA funding opportunities. You've seen some emails that I've sent out from USDA and Alaska Municipal League about grants that are out and available. I've also put informational points in my reports over previous months about the urgency if we're going to do any projects, if we're going to submit any. These are national competitive grants, and they score based on community involvement and community priority. So not only do we need to submit applications that qualify for the funding, but we also have to demonstrate that they're high priority for the community. There's some information that follows here that you can go and look at different grant projects or some of the capital projects that are coming out through the infrastructure bills. All of these are going to have tight timelines. Some of them have notice of funding opportunities already posted. If we're going to apply for any of those, there's a lot of work that we need to do on the front end to be competitive. So if anyone's interested in any of the grants, or you know of something and you're not sure it qualifies for one of these grants, give me a shout. We'll talk about it and see if we can find a funding opportunity for them, and then what the steps would be to make those projects viable. Mayor, that's all I have, unless there's some questions.
I see our treasurer, Eduarda, has her hand up.
Hi, it's Phoebe. Actually, I just wanted to do a quick clarification on that FEMA money. That is funds that they've reimbursed us for certain COVID expenses. And so now those funds that are freed up are actually CARES Act funds that are freed up for purposes eligible under the CARES Act. And so I just wanted to make sure that that was understood. The FEMA COVID money is closed, and it just increased our CARES Act availability money again by $9,300 because we could reallocate it for other uses. So just want to make sure that was clear. And thanks for the kind words.
Thanks, Phoebe.
And Lewis Sharman, a question for you.
Yeah, Tom, and thanks, Phoebe. Your comment may partly answer my question, which goes to COVID testing, specifically rapid tests. Tom, I think you mentioned we had $2,000 or $3,000 left available for that through sometime in March. How many tests does that translate into? How does it match up with how quickly we're going through tests? And what are we going to do after March?
Well, I don't have the details on the rapids test. I can get those from Sol, who can get the information from our testers. In terms of what we do after March, we had talked about testing after funding expires, both PCR and rapids testing. And the council said, yes, that testing is a priority. So we'll find a way to continue testing, even if it means self-funding. My expectation in talking with DHSS is that they're anticipating extending funding for the PCR program into 2025. And there was some talk about providing funding for rapids, but you may have seen that they're also doing in-home rapid testing kits. And so they're continuing to work on ways to do rapid testing. So it's my understanding that they're looking at developing new programs, whether it's through funding to municipalities or NGO, non-government organizations, or doing in-home availability tests. That's about all I know at this point on it. I will get with Sol and get the information on the rapid test itself that you asked, and I'll get that out to everybody as soon as I get it, and I'll update my report for the general meeting to reflect that.
Thank you, Tom. Any more questions for our city administrator? Thanks, Tom. And I'll be working with you tomorrow morning at 9 for yet another FEMA call. So back to that again. Okay, I guess we go to the next item on our agenda, which I think we have coming up here. Yeah, we'll go through public comment on non-agenda items. Consent agenda. The clerk will have another certificate of records destruction, which we get just about every month. And then we've got another NCO coming up on departmental budgets. And I wonder if our treasurer could give us a quick rundown on what that NCO will be, please.
Well, hello, just a little trouble with the mouse. So what we have here on the budget category for our NCO is we are amending the budget that we had originally. So you see the tax income retail income here on the first $325,000. So we are going to receive a little more. So we amend the budget for $400,000. The same as the tax income for remote seller state retail tax. It was budgeted initially for $20,000, and we are budgeting for amending the budget for $30,000 and so forth in all these lines. The expense is the same thing. Instead of putting more money, we are doing an expense at the marine facilities advertising. So there was nothing on the original budget. And now we are amending that for $260 on this item here. The DRC, we are doing the same thing. We are amending the budget here. It was budgeted the adding funds for the household hazards waste event for the spring. It was $7,700, and we are amending $3,000 more for this and so forth. Hello? Yeah, that's all I have.
Okay. Any questions for the treasurer on this NCO that will be on our agenda for the general meeting? I'm glad to see that Paul will be able to do a hazardous waste event now that we have our new hazardous waste unit. And we know there's been a lot of this stuff building up in the community. So it'll be nice to give people an opportunity to get that out of their garages and off their property and into safe storage and then on its way to either recycling or proper disposal at a proper waste site. So thank you very much for that, Madam Treasurer. The next item is the endowment fund transfer. That's another NCO that we actually introduced last time, you'll remember. And so it's just a matter of voting on that, moving that money into the checking account. We do that routinely every year. And makes it possible for us to award the grants under the endowment fund program, and money is then in checking account as the grantees complete their projects and meet the requirements for reimbursement, and we can reimburse them out of that account. Okay, then the next one will be, the next item on the agenda will be to award endowment fund earnings or grants for 2022. And I believe Council Member Lewis has led the group to review the grant applications, and now would be a good time for us to hear what the group thought.
All right, thank you. Could we go to the page that shows our process? I think it's, yeah, the next page, I think. Yeah, right there. I don't know, it's a lot to read, but just wanted to give everyone an idea of how the process goes. And so our group was Council Member VanderZanden and Council Member Furr and I, and we met twice. And the first time we just kind of oriented ourselves to the five proposals that came to us, which I'll talk about more in a sec. And then we scheduled a time, I guess we met three times, because then we scheduled a time to allow an opportunity for the five different groups to kind of give us a 5-minute pitch on the projects and answer any questions we had. And then we came back a third time with our final scores. So we have a score sheet that we went through for each project and basically scores all the different criteria somewhere between 0 and 10 points. And then we get a numeric score. And so on our last meeting, we shared our scores, combined them, and took the average of them. And if you look at number 9, it says any application scoring an average of less than 50 points will not be considered. So there were a couple that did not score 50. So I'll talk about those. So that's the process. And if you want to go back up to the previous page, that'll show the five groups. And I guess at this point, should I just go through our scores and our proposed allocations? Does that work, Mr. Mayor?
Yes, I was just checking in with the clerk on that. Yes, let's do that. Let's hear how you score them, which you thought we ought to award, and how much to each.
Okay. And council members Van der Zanden and Furr, feel free to jump in if I miss anything. Hopefully I combined our notes correctly. It was a really tough year because we had so many applicants, and a lot of them wanted, some of them wanted the full amount and some wanted close to the full amount. So we had to make some tough decisions, but luckily the scoring matrix helped us in that two of the proposals, the average score did not come up to 50. So they're disqualified for that. And even though they were both great proposal or great, I should say they're great organizations with, we think, broad community support, but in both cases, the projects were bigger than the funding would be able to do much for. And so the first one is Tidelines Institute, and basically they were looking for the full amount of the endowment fund earnings, which is $44,673, to go towards a classroom in a building. And the classroom was $134,000 and the building is $960,000. So basically a small part of a very big project. And because the budget was, there wasn't a real discrete project within that we saw that could be achieved with partial funding, which would be all that we would be able to give to them. And it also seemed a little farther off, like they have to have the building first and then they can build the classroom. So it seemed like maybe a better for next year's grant cycle. I think I'll leave that at that. It was just a big project that this a partial funding would basically barely contribute to and might not even be done this year, it seems like. They did receive a $38,000 from the fund last year, and I don't think that's been spent yet, but I do need to check in that a little bit more. But anyway, it seemed like next year would be a better time for Tidelines. The other group that did not qualify, I guess, is the Gustavus Children's Enhancement Program. And they asked for $30,000 to buy a piece of land for to build a childcare facility on. So again, it just seemed like if we couldn't give them the full $30,000 because we had other higher scoring proposals, and so if we just gave them some money, they wouldn't be able to buy the land. It didn't seem like a discrete project that we could fund with this grant money. So those two did not score high enough to be funded. So that left the other three. The Gustavus Community Center asked for $22,390 for a project, two projects really. They funds to complete their stage for live performances and to complete an artist gallery in their entranceway. Very detailed budget, excellent budgeting, I guess. And so that rated very high. Another one, the Gustavus Historical Archives and Antiquities, the museum, rated high, but they were asking for $44,673, the full amount, to add an addition onto the museum. So basically double the size, at least, of the museum. This has broad community support, great project. However, we couldn't necessarily fund the entire project, so that was a little tricky figuring out if and what we could potentially fund. But I'll come back to our recommended amounts in a sec. The third applicant was the Gustavus PFAS Action Coalition, GPAC. They asked for $10,000 for testing and potentially additional flux meters, which the city purchased for them earlier this year to help determine the flow of groundwater, which is very important in determining where the PFAS in the water will spread. And then also analyze those results, hire a consulting firm to analyze the results from the flux meters that were deployed and see if plume stop is a reasonable solution for containing the PFAS in the groundwater in Gustavus. So again, broad support, very important project, $10,000. So between those three projects, we came up with kind of a compromise where, because the GPAC for $10,000 was a pretty low amount and very important, we proposed fully funding the GPAC for $10,000 and then splitting the remainder between the Gustavus Community Center and the Gustavus Historical Archives and Antiquities. So each group would get basically $17,336 each. And so they would be able to get a lot of their projects done. Like the museum could probably do a foundation and buy materials. And the community center would be able to hopefully complete the stage and probably get a lot of the gallery built. So that was what we came up with. $10,000 to GPAC and a little more than $17,000 to GCC and the museum. Council members Vanderzander and Fur, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I don't. Thanks, Tanya. You did great at summarizing.
Thanks. Any questions from anyone else?
Any questions about any of these items from the councils? Well, so you have a resolution already started, and I guess you'll plug in your amounts on this resolution and have it on the agenda. You'll get that to the clerk by the deadline on Wednesday. And I just like to acknowledge that you guys have done a great job here. This, you know, you had five grants that all had attractive features to them, and you had to make some tough decisions. And I'm really quite pleased with the way you've worked it out. And I look forward to being able to support your recommendation next week. There'll be a public comment on this, of course. So there may be some thoughts added in that process too for everybody. Yeah, any other questions? Oh, it looks like our treasurer has.
Hello, the council doesn't have to finalize the resolution. We can totally do that.
Very good, thank you very much.
No problem.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to addressing that on the at our next meeting next Monday and providing some funds in the community through this program to get some good stuff done for the community. And that's the whole idea of the endowment fund program as we have it in operation now. So let's look at our agenda. Okay, the next item is item 11, and this will be a resolution adopting, and this one I must say I'm not up on, so, but I think maybe our treasurer can give us a review on what this is.
This is Phoebe. This is every year, if we are going to participate in the state of Alaska's program for the Shared Fisheries Business Tax, which is designed to give some tax to municipalities. Fish taxes collected outside of municipalities that shares it with different municipalities across the state. And so if we want to participate in that, they give us boilerplate language to adopt the alternative method, or there's a more lengthy standard method that we've never done. And so this is language directly from the state of Alaska. And we usually get anywhere from $500 to $1,500 per year through this program. There's a set percentage that is just divvied up among the communities within Fishery Management Area 17 evenly. And then there's another portion of money that's divvied up amongst those same communities on a per capita basis. And there's more information about the Shared Fisheries Business Tax on the State of Alaska website, but this is language straight from them that the council needs to adopt if we want to participate in this program.
Thanks. Yeah, this is a pretty routine thing. I think we've done every year, and we use their text. We pass it, we sign it, send it in. They send us the money. What's not to like about that? Any questions from the council members about this project? Okay, let's go on to the next one then, please, Kyle. Yeah, I didn't have a printed agenda handy here, so the last one is the resolution of the city of Gustavus with comments on the USFS Forest Service roadless rural exemption proposal for Alaska. And Council Member Muscoviac has taken the lead on this at my request. And Jim, would you like to give us a rundown on what we're doing here and why it's important?
Well, the city commented when the roadless rule was rescinded, the city did a long resolution and a letter, and you can read it for all the reasoning behind it. And basically, I redid it because now we're putting the roadless rule back in place, hopefully. So I wrote a resolution in support of that. And it's a pretty big deal in Gustavus. I mean, had we not been diligent, I mean, we could have had 7 miles of Pleasant Island shoreline logged. I mean, that was one of the biggest threat that was local here. And that's what got me active in this issue. But I think the best thing to do is probably just read the resolution. And people will say that, well, if we have the roadless rule, it'll stop progress in the forest. But, you know, as far as mining, the 1882 mining law or 1872 mining law provides access for mines, and there haven't been any issues with people building hydroelectric facilities and things like that to get access to them. Basically, it's we're talking about heavy timber areas and keeping the roads out of those, and these are increasingly important. When we were originally discussing this, climate change wasn't really on the agenda, but you know, these forests absorb a tremendous amount of carbon, and they're very important on a global scale. But I'll let it at that unless somebody has some questions.
Any questions for Jim on this item? Okay, I do encourage you to read the resolution and Jim's letter that goes with it. There are so many reasons to preserve the Tongass Forest, the unroded natural portions of it, and Jim reviews many of those reasons in the resolution and the letter, and I'm looking forward to being able to support this and signing it and submitting it as a comment, as the city's comment on the Forest Service docket for it. Okay. Looks like that's we've gone through our agenda then for you know all the particular items that we need to discuss now. Unless there, if I missed anything, Madam Clerk. Okay, she's I guess shaking her head no. So we can go back to our work session agenda. I think we may have another couple items that are just kind of discussion things on that, but we definitely. Lewis, you have something to say or ask. Please proceed.
Mike, I just wanted to make sure that, I realize that's a draft agenda for the general meeting next week, and wanted to confirm that the tsunami siren will be added as an agenda item, correct?
That's not what I had in mind, because I hope you heard my comment at the very start that we were going to postpone that till next month because Matt Davis was unable to give his presentation to us. And I ask everybody to, in the meantime, read Matt's email and look at the two attachments that he sent so you're kind of up to speed on what his request is. And then I would ask him to schedule to make his remarks to us at the January work session. Is that okay?
My apologies. I misunderstood. That makes total sense that we discuss it in a work session and then the general meeting subsequent to that. Thanks.
Right. Yeah. I wanted him to be able to make his pitch to the whole council and let everybody decide what they think about it. So the next is Glacier Bay comments. It's comments on the plan of the park for concession housing. I think we could have. I probably could have given a better title here for that, but the Park Service has proposed to replace the concession housing at Bartlett Cove, tear down the old Browntown buildings, except for the dining hall, and build one very nice code compliant facility a little farther back and a small maintenance shop close to the road. And I reviewed their proposal. They have it out for comment with two alternatives. One alternative is to do nothing and leave the old stuff just the way it is. And the other alternative is to tear down the old stuff and do something that meets their needs much better. It will have more capacity for staff, which will allow them to remove their staff from the some of them are staying in lodge housing, which will then open up, lodge rooms, which will then open those rooms up for visitor use, which means more income for them and more tax revenue for the city. The new facility would be code compliant, whereas the other one, the old one, has lots of problems and is in fairly decrepit condition. So I've drafted up a letter supporting that to submit to the Park Service, just saying, yes, we, the city of Gustavus, believe that they should, that their recommended alternative to build the new facilities is what we would recommend as well. So I wonder if anybody has any objections to me submitting a letter to that effect. I've got it drafted. We could put it on the screen, I guess, if you want to look. Does anybody want to see specifically what I wrote? It's a one pager, just supporting the values of that and the benefits that we saw both for their staff and actually even for the city and improved visitor facilities. Looks like we don't have any objections, so I'll fire that one off tomorrow. The next one was Council Member Lewis. Tanya, you have suggested that we have a community town hall discussion. Would you like to let the rest of us know what you have in mind, what you think the benefits were, how we'd operate that, subjects, et cetera? What did you have in mind?
Yeah, thanks. So we have all gotten quite a few requests for in-person meetings and more community engagement. And so, I know we have a lot of meetings in the next couple of months, so I'm hoping we could squeeze in a town hall in which people can attend on Zoom like currently, and we could also have a in-person meeting at the school. The school is willing to host where people who are comfortable and want to meet in person could meet there and interact through the Zoom with everybody else. And hopefully at least a couple council members would be there as well. I'm willing to do it. And I've talked to a couple others that are as well. So that people get the benefit of the in-person meeting. As far as the timing of the town hall, I realize, I was hoping to do it pretty quick after the election, but it just hasn't happened yet. But we move into our budget hearings and town hall for that. Can someone remind me the timing of that generally is when we have when we solicit input on the next year's budget?
I'm gonna address that, Mayor.
Oh, okay, very well, Tom, go ahead.
Sure. So in the past, we've followed a process where the treasurer and I take a look at our current fiscal year and then look at our past 4 years and look at the trend, see how we're doing, and look at what we could expect in revenues in the upcoming year. We know that's somewhat fluid because we listen to the national and state tourism industry folks and hear what they have to say and what they anticipate, cruise lines, what they anticipate, because it affects us region-wide. And then we put together a very rough draft for revenues. Then we meet with each of the departments and look at what their requests are and find out what their needs are. And then we have a draft expense schedule for the budget. The treasurer and I will put that together in January, go over it, usually at the end of January, toward the end of January with the mayor. And then the mayor will direct us in which direction to do the rough draft of the budget for the council and the public. So we hope that in early February, we have a draft budget that we can then present to council members one-on-one so that they can get a understanding of what the budget is telling them, what it looks like and how we got there. And then we do a work session. If the mayor wants to do a work session on the budget, followed by a town hall with the community, and then a follow-up council work session to determine if any of the public input changes any of the line items, or if there's any additional changes that they want to see before we introduce the budget. And the timeline for that looks like February is all drafting and getting it set up so that we can introduce to the public in a town hall in early March. And then in April, we would go through another work session with the council. And then we introduce in May, and then we would pass in June. That's again fluid. We could also introduce in April if we think that we need more time to have the budget out on the street and do any amendments. So that's kind of the structure we use for bring the budget forward. Again, it's fluid. We can make adjustments. Council wants to do so. Did that answer your questions, Council Member Lewis?
Yeah, thank you. So ideally, you know, March is a little bit late. I think it'd be nice to do this before then, if possible. If people are supportive, you know, the general idea, in my mind anyway, is, you know, we've got a brand new year coming up and a pretty brand new council, and just putting it out to members of the community, you know, what's working, what's not working, what should our priorities be for this year, that sort of thing. And in a venue that is a little bit creative as far as trying to engage people by having a, you know, in-person option.
One of the things we have to consider is when we start drafting our revenues is what we're going to get from the legislature and what kind of forecasting we're hearing from some of the industry experts. They don't have that information available in February. We typically have to wait to see how the legislature is going to fund things like our community assistance program, tourism industry folks. They get together in February, I think it is. We usually hear some of the projections in March from them. We can do the timeline however the council would like, but for us to be as accurate as possible, we should wait and hear what we get from some of the revenue sources that we use in our budget.
Yeah, so I guess there's the question to other council members, how you feel about this idea of community engagement and town hall discussion, and whether you think it should wait for the budget cycle, which probably won't be until March, or if we should try to find a time in January when we can get going and try one of these hybrid city council meetings.
Louis Jarman, I see you have your hand up.
Yeah, Tanya, I think that's a great idea. It seems much broader than only budget-related items, and entirely appropriate to do as soon as possible.
Thanks, Louis. Any other thoughts on having a town hall maybe before, you know, maybe in January or February or something, in advance of the budget thing, and covering general topics that would be on the minds of the public, and what they'd like to see us do, what they don't like about what we're doing, and so forth? What are you thinking? Bella Furr.
I'm supportive of that. I do appreciate the option of calling in for Zoom. So as long as that's a thing, I'm willing to listen.
Thank you. Any others here? Our vice mayor.
Yeah, I would be in support of doing that as soon as possible. And Tanya, like I've said before, I'd be willing to attend in person, but I think the sooner the better.
Okay, I'm happy to see us proceed with that. And Tanya, if you'd be willing to work with Tom, and maybe there's another council member who could join you and you guys could plan out something, I'm glad to support it. So I guess have at it.
Great, thank you. I think the first thing is just getting a date on the calendar. So it seemed like we already had 3 meetings in January. Is that right? Maybe we could do the, I guess it doesn't have to be a Monday. So yeah, I'll work with Tom and others on that. Thank you.
Thanks, great idea. Okay, I think our last item on here is review of COVID-19 policies. And I'm gonna I figured out why. I'm using the, I had my screen pulled up on something else. Now you hear me? Okay, good. I'm gonna try to go to the resolution that we used. Okay, can you still hear me now? Good. We've had a number of letters and there was a petition suggesting that we, the petitioners would like us to repeal our resolution CY-2107, which was a resolution by the city of Gustavus updating the requirement for wearing of cloth face masks or face shields. We've also had a number of emails asking us to stay the course on our policy. And before I get some comments from all of you on this, I thought I would quickly read the now therefore be it resolved from that resolution, which says, given the guidance of the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, the Gustavus City Council rescinds the old CY-20-24, 21-04, and 2105 that got rid of the old mandate ones. The City of Gustavus Council respectfully requests and encourages all individuals within the City of Gustavus to get fully vaccinated if able to do so. 3, individuals should not be questioned regarding his or her vaccination status, and compliance with this resolution does not require a person to produce proof of vaccination. 4, in accordance with the guidelines of the Centers for Disease Control, those unvaccinated or at elevated risk should continue to wear masks in indoor public spaces and outdoors when 6-foot spacing is not feasible. 5, the Gustavus City Council through the mayor will give discretion to each city department to determine the need for wearing face masks or face shields for the safety and protection of their staff. And 6, this resolution is effective upon approval. And it's open-ended. There was no closure date. And it was signed by Brittany Cannamore as mayor on the 24th of May, 2021. So the request from some folks is to repeal this. And the request from other people is to keep it in place. And so I thought I'd just put it on the table for discussion here in the work session and see what you guys want to do about this. Are you interested in making some change or not? So let's hear from you.
This is Jim Mack. I'm a stay the course guy. I think that you know, our city employees, the library, the community chess, the city hall, I think that it's, you know, the imperative is to keep people healthy, and we've been doing that, and we've got to continue doing that.
Okay. Lewis, I thought I saw your hand up. Maybe did you still want to speak?
Yeah, Mike. I was hoping you could just remind us what the current policies are in those indoor city spaces right now.
I think I'm correct that in all indoor spaces at the library, the community chest, the fire hall, and city hall, that we have requirements for mask wearing by anybody entering, and when you're meeting with somebody in there or whatever. The work area of the baler at the landfill does not have that requirement. So that's the status right now. Does that answer the question? Does anybody, if anybody thinks I'm incorrect on that, then please correct me.
Yeah, that does answer the question. You know, one of the suggestions we've received is to strive for more consistency across those spaces in terms of our policy. It sounds like we're being pretty consistent. But I also wanted to throw out there to see if we can allow for more public in-person presence in those spaces by utilizing some sort of combination of having been vaccinated and boosted, and or utilize the testing tools that we have, especially the instant tests, to sort of confirm that an individual is not infected and then be able to enter those spaces that way. I'm sort of searching for ways to allow our public greater in-person access in ways that still keep everyone safe.
I appreciate that that idea. Well, one thing I didn't mention is that we do accommodate folks who do not wish to come in with a mask. Generally, with other, we can serve them outside. There have been other means of doing that, but some members of the public haven't been satisfied with that. So, other comments from the rest of the council. Joe Vanderzanden.
I wrote down some thoughts today on this I'd like to share with the council. I'll just go ahead with that. After having read different letters, including this petition of 64 people that signed to the council regarding mask mandates in public buildings, I'm now even more convinced that this town can rarely agree on anything except road maintenance. We're currently in a situation because of CY 2107 that half of the town is in agreement with a mask mandate for wearing masks in city-owned buildings. The other half feel that a mandate imposed on all by city employees is not necessary. Everyone's polarized now in their opinions, and no amount of debate and discussion is likely to change that. So I can see no solution to this problem other than through compromise. For example, on one hand, we can adopt the policy of the Gustavus Community Center. That is, as I understand it, masks are required according to CDC recommendations, but not strictly enforced. The other side of this compromise is that those that oppose masking may be considerate of those that see the need for it and wear one when lack of social distancing dictates. To achieve that, we might have to amend item 5 of CY2107, which gives city department heads discretion on mask mandates and no expiration date in sight. And as with any compromise, neither side is going to be thrilled with this suggestion, but I've heard no others, and it's ludicrous to think that the problem is going to resolve itself. I'd encourage the city council to give some serious thought to this if we're going to have peace in our town. And if not, maybe we should consider rewriting the vision statement. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Food for thought there. Anybody else have any comments on what are you thinking about this? It's not easy. Tanya Lewis.
Yeah, I appreciate these comments so far. I've been scratching my head on this a while too and wondering how to compromise, and talking to departments about the possibilities of having like mask free hours, for example, or mask optional hours. But one of the problems is just finding the volunteers to run those hours. And that's what kind of catches it. This is the hardest part for me, is that, you know, many of our departments are run on volunteers, as we heard from the library tonight. And we know from the community center, or I'm sorry, the community chest is entirely volunteers. And it doesn't feel right to me to ask them to sacrifice what their comfort level is and their perception of safety for people who, I guess, don't agree with that perception of safety. So I guess, you know, I see continuing to work towards that possibility, if we're able to recruit volunteers who would be willing to have these mask optional hours, that'd be one solution, but they would have to mask during training. And some people won't do that. So that's not even that great of a solution either. In general, I support the resolution that allows city departments to make sure that their staff volunteers feel safe. I think that's really important. I think it's just human decency. What I'd like to see the city move towards is a comprehensive COVID policy. When do masks become optional? And I think it probably should be consistent across, you know, indoor city buildings. At what point in this pandemic do masks become optional? We need to quantify that. What, you know, is it rates in our region? Is it CDC recommendations? There's got to be an end game here. And if we can define it, then at least that hopefully will comfort people that we're not going to be mandating masks forever. So I've talked to a couple of people about this already, but I think more and more that this is really important for us to really quantify when masks will become optional and what circumstances, so that we know our end game and can assure people we're not going to be doing this forever. Thanks.
Good. Any other comments from other council members? Okay. Mr. Bishop?
Yeah, I have some thoughts here. we talk about compromise and when masking could potentially be optional. And I know that a good tool used around for places that are optional are the use of rated masks, since using a normal cloth face covering is designed to protect those around you, not yourself. Just food for thought about, you know, us possibly being able to provide more of those as we move forward. Just throwing that in the mix, because I know for myself, when I feel like I'm at a greater risk of exposure, I decide to wear a rated mask and default to that because it actually does provide some protection for myself. And then additionally, I'm sort of curious on the thought of Councilmember Vander Zanden used the term polarized and also said 50-50. And at least in my opinion, and from what I've heard, I'm not quite sure that it is 50-50. I think there's more folks that are concerned. And I think those that are less concerned might be a little more vocal about it. But I would just like a little bit of clarification on where the idea of 50-50 is coming from, or if anybody else has any thoughts or their own experiences on what they've heard from the public. Because to me, all opinion aside, I've heard a lot more concern over COVID precaution than lightening up at all.
Thank you, Kyle. Looks like Lewis has his hand up again. Lewis?
But Kyle, I don't have an answer or an opinion to that question. My comment was about something else, so I'll defer until, in case other council members would like to comment on your question.
Well, Lewis, I'm happy to have you proceed, and I have some thoughts, but I'll wait till you've spoken.
Well, I really like the idea of rated masks to protect those who are uninfected from those who are potentially infected. That's a great idea. And that is the difference between N95 masks, for example, and cloth masks. And I'm very curious, and I confess I do want to pursue this idea of utilizing instant testing as a tool. I'm very curious about city employees and volunteers in those enclosed city spaces, the extent to which they would be more comfortable if they were provided with rated masks, and if members of the public took an instant test before walking in the door. I mean, I realize there's some logistical things there to be considered, but it seems like a lot of this hinges on the comfort of city employees and volunteers. And I'd like us to have a little better idea of their comfort level with those couple of additional changes in policy, if that were the case.
Thank you, Lewis. I appreciate all those comments. I have supported our department heads in making their decisions about what they feel is best for the staff, the volunteers in their departments, and the public members who come in. And I know that many, well, the library, for example, when they instituted a mask requirement, the use of the library by the public went up, and many people said they were happy to come there because there was a mask requirement. Looking to the future is really hard with this pandemic. Everybody says, we think we're done with a virus, but it's not done with us, and it keeps evolving. And every time we think maybe there's light at the end of the tunnel, we get a new variant with new concerns. It's beginning to look like we're going to live with coronavirus in one form or another, probably forever. And at some point, clearly, we're going to have to live with it in ways that are less formal than those we have. And maybe it's going to get to where everybody takes care of themselves, but it is a public health issue. And the way you deal with public health is in a public manner where the public has to work together to achieve what's right for the whole population. And currently the CDC and our state division of health, part of DHHS, all recommend a layered approach to dealing with the pandemic. And that's, of course, the vaccination is the number one thing that they promote. And we know that it's highly effective, and the vast majority of cases that are occurring are among the unvaccinated. And we feel bad for the unvaccinated who get sick just like anybody else. But even vaccination is not enough. And so they recommend the other non-pharmaceutical measures such as mask wearing, social distancing, not having large, getting together in large groups, testing, especially after you've been traveling or if you're going to be going to a big family get together of some kind, staying out of crowded bars and concerts, and even being careful in church groups with singing and so forth. So there are all kinds of measures that we have to apply to, because no one of them is enough. And I really take my guidance from the experts, particularly at our state division of health. I tune into their science webinar every Wednesday. And then on the third Wednesday, there's another one for municipalities that I try to catch with their recommendations for cities. I can tell you that everywhere I've been lately, and I've been in Seattle this week and in Juneau quite a bit this week, and masks are required everywhere, and people are wearing them everywhere. Masks are required in Fred Meyer's, not that there's anybody at the door throwing people out that don't wear one, but almost everybody in Fred Meyer's has a mask on. In Seattle, to go into an indoor restaurant, now you have to show your vaccination card or you have to eat in an outside facility. The rest of the world is taking this very seriously. And unfortunately, it means that we do have to wear masks. We wear them on the airplanes, we wear them on the ferry, because we're requested to, we're required by law on the airplanes. To me, a mask is not a hard thing to wear. I'm pretty used to it. So I guess I'm with Jim Mack on this one. I'm a stay the course guy. But if the council comes up with some, I can add that I'll continue to work on things like ventilation in our facilities. We've now got HEPA filtered portable cleaners in many of our buildings, and there's a new one just installed in the fire hall. I like the idea of buying masks for any of our staff if they need better ones, N95 masks. I bought a packet of them that found them, that particular packet, to be uncomfortable, but some of them are good. Some of them are not too uncomfortable. So I'm happy to work as mayor to make it as safe for our staff as possible. But I would take my guidance primarily from the state division of health with regard to whether masks should be required. And they continue to recommend that masks be used in indoor settings such as ours. We have a responsibility as a city. We own our facilities, and so we have proprietary jurisdiction on them. And we have the right to set the rules as we deem are appropriate for our employees, our volunteers, and the public who uses them. And our decisions may very well be different from those of a grocery store or even the post office, whatever. But we make our decisions for our stakeholders, and we hope that that others who operate other facilities, agencies, private businesses are making the best decisions they can to protect their employees and their customers and so forth. So we don't tell them what to do, but we are responsible for the rules and the protective measures in the city facilities. Now, all that said, if we heard some good ideas tonight, if there are some ways to finesse this, and I'm happy to hear them. And if anybody wants to come up with a new resolution and gets it to us by the deadline on this Wednesday or say for next month, I'd be happy to entertain any resolution that somebody wants to put on the agenda, and we can get public input on it and discuss it and decide whether it's what we want to do. Lewis, you have your hand up.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Something we haven't talked about tonight is access to City Hall, especially for general public meetings. It's my understanding that meetings like the one we're having now and our general meetings are by Zoom because we have decided not to hold them in person for COVID reasons. Is there any daylight there in the idea of allowing for the public, some number of the public to, and ourselves, to attend our meetings in person if we are wearing masks, maintaining a 6-foot social distance, and with the added air filtration technology that we're employing? Can we move a little on that?
Yes, Lewis, and thank you for raising that because I forgot to mention it. And I'd like to call on our clerk, Karen, to give us all an update. I'm looking at a beautiful screen we've got on the wall, and we're making progress on that. Karen?
Yeah, thanks. We have IT here now from Juno, and he is setting up our equipment. It requires some equipment to do a hybrid meeting where, you know, people would be able to be here in person, our council members, and then also to be able to do Zoom at the same time. And so that equipment's here. I think it's set up. I'm going to meet with the IT person tomorrow morning, and hopefully we'll have it set up for the next general meeting. The spacing is a bit of an issue. And so, you know, I don't know if we should be able to have all the council members here and a handful of members from the public. And I know one for sure is interested in attending our meetings in person. So we would be able to accommodate a few people from the public and hopefully all of our council members. Then crossing our fingers that it'll be ready for the next general meeting. I'll keep you posted.
That's really great.
Tanya.
Thank you.
And Tanya has her hand up.
Yeah, I just want to clarify because I think it's been a common misunderstanding that the city council meetings have not been open to the public because of COVID in general. But the real reason has been because we haven't had this hybrid system set up yet. And just so everyone knows, without it, when we're in, if any of us are in a room together, because I've been in it twice, it's constant feedback and echoes between the various computers that are all Zooming because there's a delay. So it hasn't been intentional that the public and even city council members have not been allowed in City Hall for meetings. It's been purely functional that we have not had the equipment to accommodate that. And so this is a big achievement that we're almost there. And I'm super excited. And I'm excited that there's people that want to come to city council meetings in person. And hopefully, you know, we'll just have to figure out a way to keep it to a minimum so that the number of people in the room is not too many. But then the great thing is that whoever wants to join from Zoom can still do that as well. So I'm excited. Good job, you guys. Thanks.
I have a couple more comments, actually. So the meetings are currently open to the public. They're just via Zoom, not at the City Hall until hopefully next week. And masks will be required inside the building for those that want to come in person. And I don't have a clear way of how to manage, you know, the number of people at this time. So we'll have to figure out how to manage, you know, how many people can actually be in here and who's gonna, what if we have more than that and who's gonna send them away and that sort of thing. So that's gonna be something we'll have to work through.
Indeed, thank you. And I am excited about the possibility of more of us being able to be here in the room together. But we're talking still about hybrid meeting. And if there are council members who don't feel comfortable about joining us here in the room directly, then the Zoom will be available still. And but if we can move to where we can let some public members into the room, I'm going to be delighted by that. So we're making some progress, and ventilation is a piece of enabling that. And the hybrid Zoom system is another piece. So we've had a good discussion here. This is not the end of the discussion, of course. This is the kind of thing that we're going to have to, you know, make almost a regular topic probably for the time being, because the pandemic situation changes, the risk for our region continues to change. Things have been looking a little better in the state, but with the Omicron variant raising its ugly head, it appears that could set us back again. So these kinds of things, we have to just keep watching and try to adjust as well as we can, and try to make sure we're still serving the public as best we can. Any other comments on this or any other subject? Okay, I've got a note from Phoebe that's asked me to remind Jim and Lewis to stop by City Hall ASAP to sign our bank signature cards. So we do need to get those all signed so we can, I think they're waiting for your last signatures. They all go on the same sheet. So we'd like to get that updated so we got more people who can sign. And thank you, Tanya, for getting in and signing checks. I noticed that you're often the first one in here to get those things signed. So thank you, Tanya. Anything else before we adjourn? Remember that there's a deadline of Wednesday for having the agenda all set, and I've got to get my mayor's report done for that. And so if there's something that you need to have on the agenda, be sure to get it to us. Okay, it looks like we can adjourn then. And thank you all for tuning in. Thanks for the members of the public for paying attention to what's going on here. And keep your comments coming in to us. And thank you, council members, for patience with our system again. So good night.